And we're back in Los Angeles at Pac-12 Media Days. Bill Riley, Kyle Gunther, and former Oregon defensive coordinator Nick Aliotti. Before we start talking about football, we have to find out. He was apparently wrestling a bear in rural Oregon. Your arm's in a sling. What'd you do?
Yeah, the bear. You should really see what the bear looks like, Bill. But in reality, embarrassingly enough, every year my brothers and I go to Tahoe. And we bring our sons, and which my nephews and things of that nature. And there's a big group there. We play 4 or 5 days of golf. And then the last day, Saturday night, we play a wiffle ball game. And this wiffle ball stadium has pine trees and pine cones. It's not really a great field, but we've always managed to come away unscathed. The old guy was trying to leg out a single. He tripped over first base. As he was tripping, there was a pine tree about 5 yards to the right, out of play. It was either the face or the arm. Put a straight arm on it, and the arm went out. Embarrassing enough, that's the story.
That's quite the you must have been motoring if your momentum carried you 5 yards into the tree.
I think it was more the trip than my motoring. You know, the motoring skills aren't quite there anymore, guys, but I'm still the competitor, not bragging, but we were competing. We want to beat those young kids. And I will say this, it was the second inning, and it was a 17-inning game that we lost in a walk-off 13-10.
Were you hitting with one arm after
I was.
That? I've played wiffle ball many a times, hitting with that, get that big swing with one arm.
You get it. I played the whole game, I'm proud to say, or people out there might think this guy's pretty stupid. And I didn't get back for like 3 days, so I didn't get diagnosed till about 3 days later.
You know, Coach, I know you were at Oregon for a number of years. You said you were there for multiple decades, five different decades. So my dad, Keith Gunther, played at Oregon 73 to 78. I believe you coached my dad in that time, or at least was in that. He was an offensive tackle. And then you were at Oregon in 2003, too?
Yes.
2003. So which would mean that to come full circle, you guys and your staff, man, you also – passed on me. I was a guy was very underrated, maybe overrated offensive lineman. And man, my dream was to go to Oregon. You guys took Josh Tuskerge 1 year. It was the only O lineman you took that year. It was a local kid from Washington. But man, you coached my dad potentially, and you almost made the mistake of coaching me again. Thank goodness you guys passed.
He would have been a GA when your dad was there.
That's right. I was. Absolutely. Well, we missed on you, Kyle. I apologize. You know, you don't always make the right choice, but hopefully you don't get bad ones that play in your program and you have them for 5 years.
What was it like for you to play or to coach at Oregon, then go across the street to Oregon State, then come back to Oregon again?
Well, it was easy at the time because as a GA, you don't get paid, Bill.
Right.
So when they were giving me money, that was pretty easy. But my heart was always with Oregon. With all due respect to Oregon State and what Gary Anderson is doing there, my heart has always been with Oregon. And so, but the money did the talking, but eventually, as you guys well know, I spent most of my career at the University of Oregon.
You know, the head coaches now in some schools, Alabama, Michigan, for example, some of these coaches are making mega, mega millions of dollars. Is there a breaking point? Is there a point where we'll see the numbers come back, or will the sport just continue to grow financially?
It's out of control. I don't think any football coach is worth more than $1 million. And they're not going to like me for saying that. It's a game. It's a sport. I wish I had an opportunity to make that kind of money. But more power to them. I hold nothing against those guys that have made it. But, you know, it's a college sport. It's a game. I think it's a little bit out of control right now. Eventually it has to come back, because unless you're going to build bigger and bigger stadiums and then charge more and more money for people to go to your games, it's a little bit out of control. And really, at some point, the attendance is going to go down because the cost is going to be so much. So it's going to be interesting how that thing plays out. I don't have all the answers to that, but it's a little bit out of control right now.
Nick, you for some of our listeners in Salt Lake City and other places that are of a certain age, they don't know anything but Oregon football being really good. Crazy uniforms, high-tempo offense, that's what they see as Oregon football. But you're old enough to know, I'm old enough to know, Gunther grew up with it. Oregon football wasn't good for a long time. Where was the turning point in Oregon football? When did things begin to change? Because you might have been part of it when you were there. Where was the turning point that went from, not so good, to to pretty good, and obviously we know where it turned great. But what was the turning point for Oregon being a good program?
There were two of them. And without bragging here, very proud of people have no idea. You, like you said, you guys might, but they have no idea what it was like in 77, how bad we were, how little we had, how tough it was to recruit. So we take a lot of pride, those of us that were 40 years from a Rich Brooks legacy, which just ended this last season. I would say that first bowl game that we went to, the Independence Bowl game, was key, and we beat Wake Forest. And then I would say this: the second biggest turning point and probably the single best play in the history of Oregon football was the Kenny Wheaton pick, where we go on. That gave us some momentum. We were picked 9th or 10th, like at one of these media day deals. Which we were picked 9th or 10th in the conference. We were 1-2 to start the season in non-league, and then we just turned it on. Those kids were phenomenal. They just lights out, self-policed, got it right. All of a sudden things changed. But that pick and going to the Rose Bowl, 94 season, playing Penn State 95, to me, those were the two biggest changing points. But really that pick in the Rose Bowl year changed things around.
And I remember the facilities at Oregon being at least a decade ahead of the rest of college football. Is it the Mashofsky Center?
Yes.
That was seriously 10 years before anybody else had that. How big of an impact did the facilities and then Phil Knight's relationship with Nike have?
Yeah, absolutely. The CAS Center was built first, which was our offices, then the Mashofsky Center with the indoor facilities, and then everything else just took off. As we, you know, there was a period there from like 2007 to 2013 where, as I was still there, and then a couple years after that, where we won 9, 10, 11, or 12 games straight.
Every year.
Yeah, every year.
And you mentioned the dark ages, too, in the 70s. Those were the dark ages. Those were like one-win teams.
Two-win teams, yeah.
Two-win teams that beat Oregon State, and everybody was happy. Nowadays, you know, it's a whole different animal now. But the last 7 to 8 years, I think we averaged 11 wins a year. So it was really nice.
Nick Aliotti's our guest, Pac-12 football analyst, longtime defensive coordinator at Oregon with us here on ESPN 700. Let's talk a little closer to home, some Utah stuff, then we'll branch out. Kyle Whittingham's program. Been the picture of consistency for the last number of years. We've talked about it with you. Kyle's a defensive guy. You're a defensive guy. They make their home there. They're trying to jumpstart that offense a little bit. They brought Troy Taylor in as the offensive coordinator. He was at Eastern. He's Jake Browning's mentor at Folsom, played at Cal, coached at Cal. What do you make of Kyle's team this year on paper as you look forward to this season?
You know, Kyle does a great job at Utah. I'm always impressed by how hard they play on defense, how physical they are as a team, how well they play on special teams. And we've talked about this before, and this is not a knock on Kyle, but in my humble opinion, and I hope it happens this year for him, until they get a quarterback that can and receivers that can make plays down the field, give you that vertical threat, that vertical stretch, that kind of different element to their offense, it appears to me that it's been tough. It always seems that the quarterback position has, and I hate to rip kids, has held them back a little bit. And the passing game has just not been as dynamic as you'd like to have. And I'm sure Kyle will be the first one to say he wants to have that kind of passing game. But that's held him back. So Troy Taylor, hopefully a great addition. I know what he did in high school. We all know what Eastern Washington did. Both those guys got a job. Bo Baldwin's at Cal. Troy Taylor got a job. So it'll be interesting to see if this year, you know, whether it's Troy Williams or is it Cooper Bateman?
Yeah.
You know,
transfer from Alabama.
Yeah, or Huntley or whoever it is. I just think that they need better, more consistent quarterback play to take it to the next level.
Well, they're going to get more consistent wide receiver play from Darren Carrington. The Oregon, the dismissal from Oregon led to him being eligible, and he should be on campus for Utah and trying to get him going this week for fall camp. But if Darren Carrington is in shape and stays keeps his nose clean off the field, I mean, how big of an impact can Darren Carrington have on the field for the Utes?
I think Darren Carrington is a great football player. I mean, he really is exceptional. that guy is a freshman. I remember him on our scout team. He was giving us fits when he was a true freshman scout. The guy can catch the ball over the middle. The guy can make the tough catch. The guy can track the ball down the field. He has good speed. Not unbelievable speed, but good speed. So, in other words, he can catch in traffic. He can catch it deep. He can make plays with his feet after the catch. I think it's a great get. It's as good as a recruit as you're going to get. And with this late addition, you know, obviously, I think Darren Carrington, and you mentioned it, if he does the things that he's supposed to do off the field, will be an unbelievable addition to Utah.
Nick Aliotti, our guest here on ESPN 700. Did you have a follow-up for that, Kyle?
No.
Okay, I thought I jumped in on you there. Defensively, Utah's terrific. They got to replace their secondary, though. They're three corners. They're nickel. They're two outside guys. Recruited very well. Their safeties, and Hansen comes back, all Pac-12 caliber guy. In your experience, you know, how difficult in this conference when you're facing six or seven NFL caliber quarterbacks, and we call it the conference of champions, probably the conference of quarterbacks this year. How difficult is that, plugging guys in that have a little bit of experience but not starter experience in the secondary?
I always thought my best defensive teams were when I had great corners. Having great corners that can take guys away man-to-man allows you to do so much more with your defensive front, putting more guys in the box, putting more pressure, trust that I can cover, I can blitz, I can run a zero blitz and play man-to-man. Corners are so important, particularly in this league.
And you know Kyle likes to play lots of man.
Yeah, he's a man-free, two-man guy. No question about it. But so you, the better my corners were, you asked me the question, the better our defenses were throughout my career. You have to have corners. Now, an inexperienced corner is always a little bit scary, but when you're primarily playing man-free and your guys can play man-free, bump coverage or off coverage, but they can actually do it and you're not throwing a lot of stuff at them, That's a great, unique skill that has to be taught. But if that's what your number one thing is, they have a great chance of getting that accomplished.
Kind of a sneaky, good D-line tradition at Oregon. I mean, going back to Haloti Ngata and Igor Olshansky, those guys. But then recently, Deion Jordan, DeForest Buckner as well, I believe. What type of tradition has Oregon built just recently on that D-line?
Well, we ended up, we made a concerted effort to get leaner and longer and bigger. And we did that with DeForest Buckner was 6'7". Eric Armstead was 6'7". Prior to them, Igor and Haloti were really big guys. For what we wanted to do, we were a big two-gap team, and we just need to have long levers and bigger guys so they can get their hands inside quicker than the offensive lineman and have that reach. We've had a lot of success with our D-line in recent years. So, that seems to have fallen down a little bit in the last couple years for whatever reason. But I think Coach Taggart will work towards that end. They are going back to the 3-4 front, and so they're probably going to look for those similar guys.
Haloti Ngata was a Salt Lake City kid, played at Highland High School. When you saw that kid playing in high school, he was also, by the way, a rugby star, too. I remember the stories, and I've talked to him about it. I think you guys asked him and you had to tell him to stop playing rugby because you were afraid he was either going to hurt himself or somebody else. When you saw him, there had been a lot of good linemen that have come through, but how unique was he at his size and his agility for a guy? Have you ever seen somebody like him up to that point in time?
I've never had an opportunity to coach a defensive lineman like Haloti. Absolutely the best defensive lineman to ever play at Oregon. Maybe wow. The best defensive player to ever play at Oregon.
Wow.
I mean, when you're – and I'm going to be close to this size. When you're 6'5", 300-plus pounds, and you can run and move like he could, and you're aggressive and you're tough and you're smart and you're a great kid, what else would you want? I mean, the guy was an excellent, excellent football player, has had an unbelievable career in the NFL. We were very fortunate to get Haloti out of Salt Lake City.
By the way, great guy, too. One of the great guys you'll ever meet, too.
No question.
I think he's got like a size 18 shoe.
We had to order. His shoes would come one in a box. Seriously. His shoes would come one in a box.
Haloti Ngata had this is before the internet era kind of took over, so you hear a lot of legends, but do you remember by chance how many sacks he had in high school? Because we've heard numbers like he had 35 sacks his senior year, or is that just sort of a legend?
35 sacks is quite a bit, but I wouldn't put it past Haloti. I mean, I don't know how anybody in high school would have been able to block Haloti. I don't know his stats. I know this. There's no way I'm going to play rugby and try to tackle Haloti not if he has the ball. I'm moving to the side. So we were very fortunate to get a great player and a great young man like Haloti.
Interesting to hear. Arguably, you think maybe the greatest defensive player ever at Oregon.
If not the greatest, in the top two or three.
The Oregon program is one that was built on speed, but also size recently. I mean, how quick of a transition do you expect Coach Taggart to have here? He's undergoing quite a culture change. Prior to this, Oregon's assistants had been there at Oregon longer than any other assistants had ever been at any school, right?
Absolutely. I think that they're going to win, and coaches hate when us media guys talk like this, and I always hated it as a coach. I don't like to project.
Now you're doing it.
I'm doing it. I know I'm doing it. But I think that Oregon will win anywhere from 7 to 9 games this year. I really do. It'll take him some time to get the culture and his program the way he wants it, but I like what I've seen so far early. I think 7 to 9 games they can win.
I want to ask you, I asked somebody this early, I think Lincoln Kennedy, but I'll ask you, Nick. You got SC in the South, Washington in the North, both picked to win the divisions. If one of them isn't going to win the division, which one do you think may not? Which one do you think has the chance to be knocked off if you're going to pick one of the two?
Wow. I think – I'm not sure I can answer that, but if you held a gun to my head, I think the one that I would think that's going to get knocked off is SC.
Really?
Yeah.
How come?
Because, like I said earlier, I think they're both great programs. I think they're both the premier program going on. I think Clay's done a great job there. But SC sometimes has had distractions. And I don't think Chris allows there to be any distractions. So, like I said, this is a tough call for me.
Sure.
But if I'm having to call it more distractions in SC than there are in Washington, that's why I went with SC being the team that might get knocked off if there is a knock. Now, if you say, do I think they're going to get knocked off? I don't think either one's going to get knocked off. And I think what's very interesting is that they could both be 13-0 or 12-0 and be playing in the championship game, and one of them having one loss to the other team that goes to the championship game, and the other team be locked out. That could actually happen.
Maybe the Pac-12 could get two teams in, obviously, but yeah, it doesn't seem very likely at that point. And that's why the idea of a conference championship game was originally there to be a financial boon, everybody trying to chase the Big 12. That game between Nebraska and Texas with Ndamukong Suh and Colt McCoy generated like $8 million or something. And so everybody wanted a conference championship game. But now, you know, are we going to reach a point where these conferences, the Power 5 conferences, either say we're all going to have a championship game or we're not?
I just think we need to get an even playing field. You know, the Pac-12 plays 9 conference games and then a 10th game if you're good enough to be in the conference championship game. So that's 10 games within your league. And like we mentioned earlier, Washington SC, they could have an interesting scenario at the end of the season. And I actually don't think it would be fair for one of those teams to not go if they lost in December, and their only losses to maybe
a top five team.
At that point, a top five team for sure. But everybody needs in the Power 5 needs to play, whether it's 8 conference games or 9 conference games. Everybody needs to play, if you play 3 non-conference, 1 gimme, 1 middle of the road, 1 great one. At least do that. And as we all know, and I'm not going to get to the SEC versus the Pac-12, but they play always either a bye or a cupcake before their rival game. So it's kind of a bit skewed there.
Before we let you go, would you like to make a public announcement about your retirement from wiffle ball, or will the career live on? Will you fight through this injury and be back on the field next year at Lake Tahoe?
I will play again next year.
Okay.
I may have a pinch
one
runner.
One more year.
Bill, I'm going to probably have a pinch runner. I'm going to have a pinch runner.
He's a designated hitter with a pinch runner.
He's going to go to Germany and get that blood plate enrichment surgery, and they're going to spin his blood around and get him recovered.
I wish I had that now, because this is a six to eight week recovery, so I'm ready to get back on the golf course before we get started.
Maybe you should have been wearing cleats, and you wouldn't have slipped and fell.
I think it's called...
Put those Nike cleats on.
I think it's called old.
Okay.
Okay.
Father Time's undefeated, Nick.
Yeah, and he won. He won last Saturday.
Good to see you.
Thank you, guys. We'll I love
you
your show.
We'll
I love
you
your attitude.
The year.
Anytime.
Yeah, we'll call you up and get you on during the year.
Anytime. I love doing it.
Love talking football with this guy.
Thank you, sir.
You'll have to ask your dad how he was as a GA.
I'm going
to. Because you know GAs sometimes, they're trying to flex their – because the coaches beat up on the GAs, and so then the GAs kind of beat up on the players sometimes.
If I remember correctly, and maybe you would remember differently, my dad, I think, was beating up on the beer cans a lot back in the day. He was friends with Fred LaCaff and Pete Laughlin, my Uncle Jeff
Pete Laughlin, I remember Pete. You know, when you're a GA, you're just trying to do everything you can to make the coaches happy. And I don't think I was that kind of guy. But you are right, Bill. There is a point where they're on you to make that scout team or those guys go hard. And it's a kind of a trickle-down effect. But I think I was player-friendly at that point. A lot more player-friendly probably than I was in the middle of my career.
He wasn't that far removed from his career, his Hall of Fame career at UC Davis.
Absolutely. And every year I get better.
Nick Aliotti with us, Pac-12 analyst.